College enrollment appears strong and esports are in for South Dakota high schools. From SDPB, today is Tuesday, September 10th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, colleges and universities strive to grow an educated citizenry and fill the gaps in the workforce of tomorrow. President Sheila Gestring of the University of South Dakota and President Barry Dunn of SDSU discuss new majors, new programs, even a new coyote. Then every profession has its ups and downs. Teacher Talk explores the highs and lows of teaching with some advice for new teachers and the rest of us as we seek steadiness at work in turbulent times. Plus, giving esports a chance in high schools across the state, Dan Suorto says, before you judge, play along and see what's in it for the students. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. College students return to South Dakota campuses seeking education, skills for future employment, and a little independence as they find their way as adults. The Board of Regents is expected to release enrollment numbers this week, but all signals point to strong enrollment across the state. Sheila Gestring is president of the University of South Dakota in Vermilion.
It's a different energy in Vermilion when those students come back, and it's just, it's tremendous. It brings all kinds of life back into the community, and the students are excited to be back, and the weather's beautiful and campus is gorgeous, so yeah. It's just a wonderful time of the year.
Families come in and get to see where they're leaving their child with, yes. Which might be from very far away or might be just down the way.
Yeah, lots of emotions, very happy, also a little bit nervous, and yeah. it's just a fun time.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about what's happening at USD, the trends that you're seeing, and how the university is responding to some of those trends.
Sure, there is a lot happening at the University of South Dakota. Right now, we're capital project-wise, we just finished a building that was built in the 30s, then for the student union, not our student union now, it's a psychology building, completely renovated it. Modernized it, gorgeous, fastest growing department on campus. So I know they'll put that building to good use. We're adding an Olympic size pool, a recreation pool, a 25 person hot tub, steam room, basically a full on natatorium to our wellness center. And that'll be open in the spring. And we're really excited about that project as well. You know, the football game on a Thursday night and the new energy that our athletics director, John Schemmel's, brought to the athletics department has been tremendous as well. That game was wonderful and everyone showed up, which weekday games can be a challenge, but yeah. They made it happen.
You said, what is the fastest growing department?
Psychology.
Psychology. That surprises me.
Yes.
What's going on there?
You know, we have a tremendous chair and faculty group in that department. I think it's meeting a statewide need. Obviously, mental health is mm-hmm. elevated in everyone's consciousness, and people just want to serve, and they're attracted to that department.
Fascinating. It would be good to get to know more about how students are coming in motivated to help in their own communities, especially rural South Dakota communities.
Absolutely.
Other new programs, new majors, what's new at the university?
You know, there are a lot of exciting new programs. About 6 years ago, we started off in our computer science program, artificial intelligence. Mm. And I think that term is a little bit nebulous to people. So I think people need to understand that artificial intelligence is not just computer science, and the pace of adoption as of late, we can really start to see that it needs to be in every discipline. Mm-hmm. And our students need to be prepared to use it and use it properly when they go out into their careers, also in the classrooms. But really, you can't do artificial intelligence justice unless you do have that comprehensive set of courses, and being a research university, we're also very well suited for that. That program has grown 330% in 6 years, and it's just incredible. We also have ag business leadership that's new to us this fall. You know, in South Dakota, agriculture is our largest economic driver, and I realize I'm a little bit biased, but I would say that the University of South Dakota has the preeminent business school in the state, and so we thought it was only appropriate that we bring that program to life within our business school as well.
So within the Beacon Business School, there is the business, the AI using for business analytics. When you're thinking about AI, it's so easy to default to how the consumer is using it in various applications, but business analytics, learning how to do that, and then jumping over to, you have a master's degree now just in AI. Tell me a little bit about that new program and what it will encompass.
Sure. I think our advantage is going to be that master's program will integrate across campus.
Okay.
And one thing USD does extremely well, in large part because of our size, I think, we work very well interdisciplinary. Our faculty, we're a small campus, relatively speaking, around the world. Mm-hmm. Our faculty work very closely together regardless of discipline, and how might my program benefit by bringing elements of your program together so that our students are very well-rounded. So, yes, we have the master's there. It's in business already. Just a few months ago, were awarded a grant from the federal government for what they call biomedical computational collaborative. In my terms, that's artificial intelligence in medicine. Mm-hmm. So our medical school will be running that center. It's about a $6.5 million grant. So it really has become part of every discipline, and it's going to keep accelerating before it slows down.
When I think of the medical school, when I think of the law school, and now as we're talking about the Beacon School and just, you know, the ethics of AI, because the ethics and the leadership is all very much part. It's not just the practice, it's also the theory, right?
That's correct.
Then I also think of, I'm not asking you to get into a political conversation, but when there is a political conversation happening in the state for the future doctors, for the future nurses, for the future lawyers, how are you encouraging that open dialogue so that people can talk about things like, do I want to practice medicine in South Dakota right now? Do I want to practice law in a rural community? What are the opportunities? What are the challenges? What's making me nervous or uncomfortable? Talk a little bit about how a university can be a space for that, because people are also concerned. You send your kids to college. They're talking about things that around the kitchen table you might have thought were going in a different way. Now they're far away and they're learning new things. Help unpack that for the parents who have concerns and excitement about that time in their kids' lives.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Lori. Ethics of AI is 100% correct. That has to be a part of the conversation. And our entire philosophy department is staffed with ethicists. It is a key piece of our curriculum. Technicians, they can build about anything. Business minds can monetize anything. We need the ethicists in the room to say, should we be doing this? Yes, we could do it, but should we be doing it? That's an important conversation around artificial intelligence. And then your broader question about having that open dialogue and making sure that we do that in a civil way. We don't have to agree on everything, but we have to learn to listen and continue to hone that skill. And I think that that's something that we can do very well at USD.
Yeah. Can we be in South Dakota leaders outside of the state, in the nation? What can come from here that you think the rest of America should be paying attention to?
You know, I've been in South Dakota my whole life, and I actually do believe that we could be the leaders. People could learn from the way South Dakota functions, operates, lives their daily lives. You know, I've been to other places, but never been around people like the people in South Dakota. You can walk down the street in any part of the state, and if you drop your cell phone, someone behind you is going to pick it up, tap you on the shoulder, and say, here, I think you dropped this. You do that in other parts of the country, and they step on it or throw it away or run off with it. You just don't know. And I'm not trying to disparage, but it's just, it's so common here that people are so polite and so good to each other. And maybe it's because we're a small state and you only have so many friends and neighbors. I don't know the answer to that. But no, I think South Dakota truly can be the leader. There is something to Midwest nice. It's okay to be nice and kind. We're very good at that.
You're sitting here with me in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Clearly, SDPB has a studio in Vermilion. But you're here as part of the USD Sioux Falls campus. Tell me a little bit about flexibility in reaching students in places other than Vermilion to get their education, especially working parents and maybe non-traditional students.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what USD Sioux Falls is all about, is to reach that non-traditional student, that student that, you know, they may have a wonderful job right now and don't want to give that up by going to a campus outside of Sioux Falls, but they do see in their future that they want to be in leadership role or perhaps enhance their skills a little bit further, and so that they can take advantage of USD Sioux Falls. And that campus is different. There is an energy level there that I have not felt in years. And I think we're going to see some official numbers that are staggering when the enrollment numbers come out. And I couldn't be more proud of that campus.
What do you think is bringing people, when we look at the encouraging enrollment numbers, that are bringing them into the classroom, that are bringing them to USD?
I think it's a partnership. Our Board of Regents, the legislature, the governor, all of our foundations, even our own operations, we've all been committed to access to a high-quality education at a manageable cost. Mm-hmm. And we've done that for 5 years. We've had essentially 5 years of tuition freeze. There are students graduating last spring and this spring that have never seen a tuition increase. And price matters, quality matters more, but price matters to students. And that's really helping us out a lot. Just can't say enough about my gratitude for the partnerships that we've had. It came out not that long ago that South Dakota is number one in terms of affordability for a college education.
Sheila Gestring is president of the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. Just like South Dakota needs more mental health professionals, Governor Kristi Noem says we also need accountants.
I just ran the numbers. South Dakota has one of the fastest growing economies in America. We have close to 20,000 open jobs, including accountants.
South Dakota State University is looking to add to the state's accountant tally with a new major. Barry Dunn is president for SDSU.
There's students everywhere, which is always fun. You know, in the evening, the campus is just abuzz with whether it's going to a tutor or a supplemental instruction class or playing football or something. There's just kids everywhere. So it's actually busier around here at 6 o'clock in the evening than it might be at 8 in the morning. but it's really fun.
Well, how about what's happening at SDSU from trends or new majors or new initiatives? And I want to ask you first about the R1 classification and the efforts to sort of level up from a research standpoint at SDSU. What can you tell me?
Well, we're excited to take that challenge on. We believe it's achievable over the next, it will be multiple years. And the purpose of it, I think, is really important, that it's not about SDSU. It's about economic development for our state and region, Lori. So I think that's the main key, that we will, as an R1 university, we will have more creative minds coming up with solutions to this dynamic world we live in and challenging world. And I think that's the purpose. And we believe it's our land grant responsibility to meet that full on, and we can best do that as an R1 university.
Are there new majors or new programs that you wanted to elevate for listeners today?
Yes, we have. We're in our second year with elementary ed and special ed, which are, I think, very exciting for us. The enrollment is very high. And we also got permission to offer an accounting major. We just got that permission late in the spring. So I don't think we've seen a big shift yet, but we expect to generate a lot of accounting majors over the next few years to fill a very challenged area that even the governor called out in her ads, that we don't have enough accountants in this state and we aren't producing enough in the Regento system. So they allowed us to add the major to our list of very strong programs, and we're excited to do that.
Yeah. The numbers for our enrollment are not going to come out until tomorrow. What can you tell us, though, anecdotally, about how you're feeling about growth and enrollment right now?
Well, our dorms are full, which is a great sign, and our freshman class we know is large. We know that we have more international students than we did a year ago. So we, all the signs are our retention from freshman to sophomore is very high. So we're excited to get to see those numbers on tomorrow. And we think they'll be very positive for us.
Talk about housing a little bit. Is it difficult to figure out? There's been a lot of national news about how much housing in universities cost. Talk a little bit about tuition expenses and the tuition freeze, and then where housing comes into play.
Well, the tuition freeze is really the last 5 years. One of those years, we had a 1% increase. So we've had really flat tuition for 5 years. And what that's done is create a very large margin between our tuition and the tuition, certainly in the surrounding states or with, and maybe even more so with private universities. South Dakota's really taken a very strong stance on affordability, the Board of Regents has, and that was supported by the legislature and the governor, and it's paying off. As people see the numbers tomorrow, they will think immediately that students are recognizing us as a very affordable place to get a degree in engineering or in nursing or in pharmacy or in agriculture. Those classic degree programs we have. So they'll recognize that it's great value. On the housing side, the success rate, the graduation rate of students who spend their first 2 years on campus is proven by studies for many, many years that it's the success rate of students who spend the first 2 years on campus is much, much higher than students that don't live on campus. That assimilation that students gain and the maturity that they gain, the friends they make, the camaraderie they build with fellow students, it's hard to maybe describe how important that is. Mm-hmm. So the final measure is graduation rates, and they are dramatically better if they'll spend 2 years in our dormitories. The cost is, reasonable. They've got to live somewhere. They're either living with mom and dad or they're renting an apartment somewhere. And we believe that the food plan and the that they're required to have if they're in the dorms it also provides them really great nutritional value, which is important and can be ignored if they're living alone. And mm-hmm. So there's some real benefits, Lori, that once you just stop and think about them, just make an awful lot of sense. So we're glad that our dorms are full and students are building those relationships and going to have a higher level of success than if we hadn't had the dorm capacity that we had. So we're, again, excited about the future.
Are there ways that that you're rethinking majors or curriculum or leadership when we look at the world that we live in today with artificial intelligence and some of the ethical decisions people will have to make? Is that just integrated in every department at this point, in every major, or are there certain issues or are there certain programs you'd like to pull out right now?
I was walking across campus this morning and a large group of kids came out of a classroom, and I was talking to two young men and asked them which class it was. It was an ethics course, which I thought was interesting. I think those values, those core values for this university are extremely important in the world in which they live. Artificial intelligence is a part of the world we live in. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous, and it will be even more so in their lives. So having them aware of it, having them understand it, having them write programs about it is how to use it effectively and ethically is critical. There's no putting your head in the sand on this one. We've got to be front and center about it. It doesn't belong to one university versus others. It's everywhere. So it's everywhere on our campus right now. So that's in discussion groups, in engineering classes, in computer science classes, but also in journalism classes. So I think that's the best way I can say is that it better be front and center on every campus, because that's what these young people are going to be faced with.
Yeah. Anything that you want to elevate from the Wokini Initiative?
You know, we are excited about fall programming we have with our Wokini Initiative, including having Billy Mills on campus for the South Dakota Festival of Books, but also some special programming for us. It was actually Billy Mills' autobiography that I read, whose title was Wokini, that helped me pick out the name for the program. So far, the most rewarding thing for me personally has been last spring's graduation, where we had a very large number of American Indian students graduating. And one was a pilot, one was in architecture, multiple students in teaching, going to law school, going to med school, going to veterinary medicine school. So it was very inspiring to see that first couple groups of students really graduating now and moving into the real world, so to speak, and into fields that will certainly propel them, their families, and their communities with a great deal of strength into the future. So it's really, we're not at the scale that I had hoped for at this point, Lori, but we're getting there. And I guess the main thing is these young people are really succeeding, which is very exciting.
When did you first read that autobiography, and what inspired you about the life of Billy Mills that you carry with you to this day?
Well, he's, I guess, probably about 10 years older than I am, not quite, and he's inspired me my whole life, because when I was a, early teen, what he accomplished in that race and winning a gold medal coming from Pine Ridge, it was just shocked everybody in Indian country, certainly on the Rosebud where I was spending that summer. And so it's been a very exciting story my whole life. I've never met him, so I'm excited to meet him. The word Wokini, which roughly translates into a new beginning. So he talks about the life that he lived, and that incredible accomplishment of winning the gold medal in the Summer Olympics, just created a new life for him. It was a new beginning. His story is just very compelling, given his background, and we're excited to have him on campus.
Olympic champion Billy Mills joins In the Moment for a live broadcast on Thursday, September 19th at noon Central. SD Nelson is here as well, along with some other children's authors, and you can be part of the live broadcast audience. We'll open the doors to the studio at 11:30 that day. The event is free. That's September 19th at the STPB Studios in Sioux Falls. We're at the corner of 4th Street and Phillips Avenue. You're listening to In the Moment on STPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Some of life's most rewarding experiences can also be incredibly hard. Today's Teacher Talk features part two of Gina Benz's Dear New Teacher series. We focus on the highs and lows of education. Gina Benz is a recipient of the Milken Educator Award. She is in her 25th year of teaching, and she helps the next generation of educators find their way through the Teacher Pathway Program. Jackie Wilbur is on the faculty of the University of South Dakota. She's director of the Center for Student and Professional Services in the School of Education. We're connected in Sioux Falls and Vermilion. Gina Benz, recap the love letter, the mentorship letter that you're sending out to some new educators.
I love it that you said love letter. I remember one time in our little like teacher lounge, you could say, we were talking about, you know, what's one word you would use to describe each of us in this room right now? Mm. And I can't even remember what everyone else's were, but they said love for me.
Oh, wow.
That is one of the biggest compliments of my entire life. And so, yeah, this is a love letter because I love my job. I love my students. I love my former students. And so I have Teacher Pathway students, two cohorts now who are actually teaching in the schools. And my Dear New Teacher series is to them because I want them to succeed and find the love that I have found.
And in that love, there are highs and there are lows. It's really hard what you do, Gina.
There's a lot of professions that are really hard. Lori, your job is really hard too, I think. But yes, I will affirm that. Teaching is very hard. It's also very rewarding. And in the companion blog, I said, it's just a truth of life that most of the really rewarding things in life were also really hard things. It seems to go hand in hand.
Yeah. It's hard to get to where you are at. To begin, Jackie, when you're getting to know the next group of young teachers, what are some of the things that they find difficult in just the educational process to becoming a teacher? What's hard about it?
Oh, that's such a great question. There's so many things that are hard about it, and it's also really unique to each person. I mean, like life, everybody finds different aspects of it challenging. I think it's always a revelation to them to remember, or maybe not remember, but to see what students know now, and or more accurately, maybe what they don't know now. There's all of these, last talk we had, Gina talked about setting expectations and that you have to be really explicit and clear. And there's all of these things that we think like, oh, they would just know X. And when you're 8, you might not just know X. That might be brand new information to you. So I think that's always kind of a revelation for people going into the profession is to go, oh, wow, I really need to expressly teach or expressly state so much more than I realize. That's a big one that comes to mind.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons I like learning from people as an adult who are teachers, if that makes sense. Because of how well they explain things.
We have lots of practice.
We do.
In a world where, now think about it, like when I was younger, everything that you learned new was probably from a teacher. Now, a lot of times I'll ask how to do something and people will say, well, find a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. And finding a YouTube video with a teacher who knows what they're doing is another level of curation. Mm-hmm. Where you're trying to find somebody who is a good teacher on YouTube and can explain things for you. So, I mean, we have that all the time. We get a new, program at work and you just figure it out. Or something doesn't work and you have to Google how to get it to work. Mm-hmm. And you're like, man, we used to learn how to do these things before we even, and now we're responsible for really our own learning in a lot of ways. So I do appreciate a good teacher even as an adult learner is what I'm saying.
And I would say that your really good teachers probably weren't the exceptional student in whatever subject area. Mm. I'm not saying they were a poor student, but they probably had some of their own struggle when they were a student. Yeah. Some type of struggle, because then they learned how to learn. Yeah. And they learned how they needed it to be explained to them.
All right, so let's start with celebrating and resting in the highs and not being surprised at the lows. And then you describe in the companion blog what steadiness looks like for you. And this is for everyone.
Yeah.
Every professional, for sure. Every parent. Get curious, not furious.
Yes.
So I love that one.
I do, too.
Because you can remember it when you're getting mad.
It's so quick and easy to remember. Yeah. And so the whole blog stemmed from this tradition where the people who gather in my room at the end of the school day, we talk about our highs and lows of the day. Mm. And you will have highs and lows in most jobs. Then steadiness. How do we find the balance? amidst the highs and lows. And be curious, not furious is huge for me. It's number one. Because let's say a student didn't get some homework done. Are you going to be furious about it or curious? I tell you what, if you're furious about it, you might get the behavior to change immediately in that moment, but it won't be changed for the long term. If you get curious about it, the behavior might not change immediately, but it probably will for the long term.
Mm. You have a student who didn't look at you or make eye contact for the first half of the year.
A whole semester. We're talking months. And you didn't say everything in the blog. I mean, he even swore at me sometimes. Mm. He just, anyhow, I just got curious. And so I would discreetly, not calling him out in front of everybody. You got to help students, you know, they have their dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And so discreetly, you know, step out in the hallway, take a break. And then discreetly, when I could step out and join him, what's going on? What happened? And something would, you know, there was always a reason. Mm-hmm. All behavior is communication.
Mm. Mm.
And so I just had to have that patience.
All behavior is communication. All right. Difficulties are puzzles, not problems. Jackie, does that one resonate with you? Seeing a puzzle, not a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think curiosity goes right along with that. And I think to echo what Gina is saying and to kind of extend it a little further, just to say that I don't know. I think we need to assume the best in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that puzzle becomes easier to solve when I assume that everyone is doing their best.
Mm-hmm.
And so the difficulties are not someone, especially a child, like intentionally trying to be difficult, obstinate, rude, mean. Those are symptoms of a problem or a puzzle that needs to be solved, yes, but also to just see a person in front of you and assume that they are doing the very best that they can. And I think if you can approach everyone that way, the puzzle becomes more fun to work on and you are less furious, to go back to the first tip that Gina gave.
I love this. Don't start a wildfire when you could extinguish a campfire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gina. Is that number three on
the
list?
That's number three. Yep.
So,
otherwise known as don't hit reply all.
Okay. So when you have a low, not the highs probably, when you have
a low moment,
when you have a low moment, sometimes I at least want to process with everybody who comes across my path.
Mm-hmm.
That's not wise. That's not wise. You find your mentor, you find your trusted people, and I'm guessing, you know, I feel like people probably don't have 10 or 15 trusted people, right? I'm talking about the two people, the three people who are trusted. And so when you just limit it to those people, you're probably going to extinguish that campfire. But if you're just deciding to talk to everybody about the issue, you might ignite a wildfire.
Mm-hmm. That's a really big one that we try to talk with our students about, especially when they're going into that teacher residency year, is to just remember how much of a neural network and like how communicative we are as teachers. Because in some ways, not that wildfires need to be started, but there's sometimes when you do need to talk to just about everyone that student has as a teacher in order to figure out the puzzle, right? Like there's sometimes when you need to say, like, we need to get everyone involved in this. But that's not always the case. Like many, many things are just like Gina said, like it's a campfire and we just talked to one person about it. So that's something that we talk to up-and-coming teachers about, is knowing that difference of when do you need to alert everyone at the school about something that happened, and when do you need to alert no one and just go home and take a nap? You know what I mean? Because that is a nuance that is case by case, and I think just an ongoing evolution of learning the job and having enough experience of different things going wrong or going right to know. And so I wish I could give better examples, but I mean, a very basic one is like, I'm worried about this child's safety. That mm-hmm. is an immediate, we are letting everyone know. Yeah. And then this child did not bring a pencil to class, you know, on the opposite end. And now I'm going to all of their teachers to ask if they're bringing a pencil or not. And now all of a sudden we're all talking about this one student's inability to be responsible with pencils. It's just unnecessary. So I'm giving two extreme examples, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about is when do you need to let everyone know and when do you need to realize it's a campfire?
Yeah. Number four, decide which battles you claim and which ones you leave for others to claim.
Yeah, I'm a person who I try to do it all.
I want all the battles.
Yes. I want justice.
Yeah.
Right. I want everything to be how it should be, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when you spread yourself too thinly and try to fight against everything or change everything or fix everything, you probably don't do it well. And then you also prevent other people from an opportunity to make a difference.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So by taking on too much, you're not letting somebody else step up and take on the thing that they might want to learn how to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You're not letting them grow.
Jackie, mm-hmm. this is also about boundaries, too. I remember when I worked briefly in the school district, you know, teachers would take break or they would say, and I didn't know what that meant, that they had a planning period. I just didn't know what that meant. And I remember thinking, so I don't, mm-hmm. I'm asking you a question. And it took me a very short period of time because all the teachers were on the same page with, no, this is my time to do this. Mm-hmm. And I'm over here doing this. And this person is in charge of doing that right now. You need to go talk to them. It's boundaries as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the other piece of that is I might not be doing my job while I'm trying to do these other roles then.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
then I am letting down the system, which needs me to be doing the thing I'm supposed to be doing in that moment. Because during planning period, teachers are planning, they're putting grades in, they're responding to parent concerns via email, they are collaborating with other teachers. Those things are their job.
Yeah.
And so if they don't get grades in, if they don't respond to parent concerns, if they don't plan their lessons, they're not upholding their end of the bargain. And none of those other people are going to say, oh, well, she was talking with so-and-so during that time. There's only 24 hours in a day. And so mm-hmm. if you want to be doing the job that you are assigned to do and doing it well, you have to uphold the boundaries of saying, like, that's actually not what I'm supposed to be doing at this time, and this person is assigned to be doing that. Otherwise, you'll shirk your own duties, and you can't do that.
Yeah.
So,
all right. And number five, be discerning when you select who to go to, when it's time to ask for help. So sometimes it's time to ask for help.
Yeah, and
but
for
from
a lot
whom?
Of different reasons.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter to just not grab the first person you see.
Yeah.
If you're like, okay, I'm at a point where I need help with something, think. Who actually has access to help you?
Mm-hmm.
Who can actually make a difference? Who has shown they're trustworthy and they have some wisdom in this particular area?
Yeah.
So it's probably not going to be the same person every time.
Well, and Jackie, that reminds me of what we said, what you said when your administrator, we were talking about some of these difficult things and difficult conversations that come up. And then it was like, well, don't forget you are a principal.
Yeah.
Or you have an administrator. You have someone whose job it is to handle some of these things. Make sure that they get to do their job. Go to them when you need them to do that.
Mm-hmm. And now that I'm in an administrative faculty role at the University of South Dakota, I'm also now aware of the fact that administrators might have more information mm-hmm. that I didn't have when I was in a purely teaching role. And there might be more to the story than I knew. And so by alerting, there are times where I think, oh, it would have been good as in this administrative role if this person would have alerted me to that because I had the other pieces of the puzzle that they were looking for.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think it's a really good reminder that we're all on a team in education and that it takes the village, just to say the cliche, to support everyone. And so it's good to go to your administration, to the counselors, to the other resources that are in your building because they have the resources that you would need.
Yeah, I love that, the idea that this is a dear new teacher letter. And by the way, you were going into a village.
I do like that.
Yeah, you're not at an outpost by yourself teaching. This is a village. It is set up in a way that will nurture you and support you in this role. And Gina, that kid who wouldn't look at you and swore at you by the end of the year, where was he at?
He asked me for a hug. Oh. It was the last bell had rung. He walked in the room and said, "Can I just get a hug goodbye?"
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh.
Mario Kart 8!
After a successful pilot year, esports is now a sanctioned activity for South Dakota high school students. Dan Swartos is executive director for the South Dakota High School Activities Association.
We had a really good pilot year. We had, I think, around 25 schools that competed. It was a couple hundred kids. About 80% of those, I think it was 70 or 80%, weren't involved in any other activities within their school. And that was a huge thing for us, because that's one of the main reasons we're doing this, is to try to get kids involved who otherwise aren't involved and get those kids a connection to their community and to their school. We've partnered with Fenworks. They're out of Grand Forks, North Dakota. They're our partner for esports. They hold the licensing for the titles, and they do the scheduling, and it's sort of on their server where these contests are held. They did a really good job with it. They had a year-end tournament. You know, we didn't call it a state tournament because it wasn't sanctioned yet, but they did a culminating tournament at South Dakota State and did a really great job with it. And the kids had a lot of fun. We were able to work out a lot of kinks within that. A lot of it comes down to scheduling. Things that they needed to work out was scheduling and just making sure schools show up to play when they play. It's a little bit different than other things that you're doing, because you're not traveling to go to a contest. There's a contest scheduled, and each school plays that at their own site. Getting better communication, getting better consistency within the contests that were supposed to happen, and they worked out a lot of kinks throughout the year, and that got better and better and better as they went. And so we're gearing up, getting ready to go here, and we're excited about it.
When does the season start? How long does it go?
It'll start in December. I think the state tournament is going to be the weekend after state boys basketball, and I believe it's going to be at South Dakota State again.
Okay.
They do it kind of in two 4-week bundles. They'll play for 4 weeks. They'll take a week break, and then they'll do another 4-week section of competition with some practice time and some preseason contests in the beginning of the season there. So it's looking like it's going to be December through mid-March.
There's scholarships at stake for college-bound students. What are the opportunities of, you know, being a state champion in one of these events?
Yeah, there's a lot of universities around the country have esports teams now. I know in our state, I believe Dakota State University has a huge program. They're a leading program around the country in esports. I think the School of Mines has a program already, and a lot of the other universities around the state are starting to gear up towards that as well. So that's a great opportunity for kids to be able to get out there and compete for scholarships. And it also gets them in the door for some career opportunities as well. So I think it's a great opportunity for kids.
Help us understand why you think it's good for career prep or the future of, you know, people going into the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the kids that are doing this are also involved in computer sciences class or programming classes, graphic design type things, video game design, and that all ties into esports, into what this is. There's also a subsidiary of esports that involves drone racing, and being able to fly drones is a big skill to have. People are using drones now for agriculture. They're using it for land surveying. They're using it for a number of different things. So I think this gets kids involved in the technology side, and whether it's, like I said, programming or coding, or it's drone type things. I think it just gives them an opportunity to see what opportunities are present within the technology fields. Even if you live in a small town in South Dakota, you can tie yourself into that.
So connectivity is really important here. You got to be connected to play these games in any school, any high school that's going to participate has to have some pretty good connectivity.
Yes, that's correct. And we've been working with SDN Communications. They've been giving out grants to schools to help get their program started, and this is the one advisory committee we have where we have a school technology director on it. And that's a big part of this, and getting everything set up is making sure the firewalls are right and making sure the equipment is right so the kids have what they have, and that when they show up, everything's ready to go and there aren't any glitches. So connectivity is a huge part of this. We're really thankful for that partnership with SDN and what they've been able to help out with schools.
All right. The first game you ever played, what kind of system were you on?
It was probably an Atari.
Yeah.
When
Asteroids,
I was a kid,
yeah.
It was probably Mario Brothers or Pong or something. I remember as a kid, I was telling my kids about this, that we would go to the video rental store every once in a while, and we'd rent a VCR or we'd rent a Nintendo for the weekend and a couple of games for the weekend and take them home and play as much as our parents would let us. And whole different world now. But
do you have a favorite game?
Oh man, I haven't.
As you're watching these kids play, you know, what have you seen that you're like, that captured your attention, that captured your imagination?
You know, I've got a senior, and he got that new college football game. I've played a couple games of that with him. I grew up playing, you know, Tecmo Bowl on the Nintendo and Madden football and more of the sports games. But I think they're going to do Mario Kart as one of the games this year, and that's a game that's been around a long time, and I love that game. So I think Mario Kart will be fun.
I'm pretty good at Mario Kart. I'm not challenging you, but... But it's pretty hard to beat Isabel on her little trike.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Chess is on this list. Is chess one of these games?
Chess is, yeah.
Okay.
Chess was actually pretty popular last year, and it will continue to be. We haven't decided on, I think they've got the game titles mostly selected for the year. That's part of the advisory was running through. You know, what guidelines are we going to put in place for title selection? And I think we're settling on, rather than trying to put a, you know, sort of a list together, I think we're going to rely on the ratings that are already in place for game titles and probably restrict it to games that are T for teen or E for everybody, and use that system that's already in place that rates the games. It's federally monitored. They rate games, I think, weekly. And if there's changes to games, they re-rate them. So okay. I think that's what we're going to go with. And it'll be a lot of the games from last year. And I think they're going to add a couple.
Nice. All right. Any final thoughts that we need to let people know about these if they want to learn more or tune in to their hometown team playing?
I would just encourage people to have an open mind. And when we got into this, my refrain was, you know what? I don't fully get it either, but I know I have kids. And I know that they're interested in this stuff. And from what we've seen, it's not. You don't have scores of kids quitting, you know, basketball to go join the esports team. It's for the most part, it's getting kids involved and giving them opportunities to compete for a championship in an event that's relatively affordable. There's no travel or anything like that, and it's giving kids an opportunity to compete for scholarships in college. And we think it's going to be a great opportunity for kids to compete that a lot of them otherwise wouldn't be competing at all. So I just encourage people to have an open mind, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Dan Swartos is Executive Director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. Here's what we're working on next. Should a primary election be a way for political parties to choose their standard bearers, or is it a way for all voters to narrow down a field of candidates to the top two choices? South Dakotans decide on Constitutional Amendment H in November. We'll look at who wins, who loses, and who decides. I'm Lori Walsh from all of us at SDPB. Thanks for listening.